Chapter 7. Shiban looked down at his limbs, stripped of their armor now, illuminated by the light of ceremonial candles. Censers burned slowly in the dueling chamber's alcoves, each scented with sacred oils. The guandao, powered down, hung loosely in his grip. Metal glinted between the slabs of exposed muscle, grafted onto the margins of his black carapace, and still thick with scar tissue. The white shift he wore exposed the full toll of his augmentation. Forearms gone, calves gone, thighs studded with pistons and braces, his neck a mass of interlocking valves. From far below, the Khaljian's engines churned and boomed, powering through an ether that was always in turmoil. Calligraphic banners hung in the gloom, each one marking battles fought by the Brotherhood. The ritual names charted early glorious victories, culminating at Chondax, through to the decisive crisis at Prospero. Thereafter, the marks were more often of defeat or Pyrrhic charges that in the long run conquered no ground. To witness them was to witness the slow degradation of a once proud and wild heritage. The banners would have been created with almost infinite care in the past, but now no time existed to produce them properly, and so the lines were hurried and imperfect. All things were done as they had ever been done, but the soul of them was gone. The censer smoke was empty of spirits, the cold air empty of songs. Shiban shifted the guandao again, rehearsing the moves he had made against the Third Legion champion. He had done so a dozen times already, trying to find the error he had committed. So far, he had discovered none. His enemy had simply been better, faster, stronger, more instinctive. There was nothing much to learn from that, only an acknowledgement of weakness. He could guess what Yashugai would have made of it. The Stormseer would have given him a disapproving glare, and that alone would have forced him back to the training arenas, again and again, until the floor was corrected. Qin Shi would never have been bested so easily, Jubal either, nor Jemulin, had he lived to see such days. There had been a time when Shiban had aspired to match the deeds of those names, to become one of the greats of the Ordu. Prospero had ended those chances and brought in the shackles instead. Such was war. Such was fortune. And there were no longer prizes to be grasped from the mire. The guandao swirled through the dark, carving the air. Shiban stepped into the attack, fighting through memory an enemy who no longer stood before him. He had done that years ago on Chogoris, with enemies drawn from the archives for hours at a time. His blade strokes then had been as free and precise as the strokes of his calligraphy brush, back when he still dared to pen verses in the old tradition. Shiban had not written a line since Chondax. None of the old scholars had, as far as he knew. The words were no longer there for them. Taxia, they called him now, the Restorer. He had grown in the favour of the Khagan, and his brotherhood had swelled, taking in recruits from the brotherhoods of shamed Khans. Along with Jubal, Ginak, Og, Yashugai, and Qin Shi, he had risen in the councils of the Primarch, sharing in the Kurultai that plotted out the strikes against the ever-encroaching warfront of Horus. Only the damned of the Sagyar Mazan had taken on more dangerous assignments, and their losses were purifications. The blade angled, dipped, pulled back. Shiban adjusted his weight, compensating for every shift of the glaive. As he dragged his leading foot away, one of the mechanical conduits in his ankles snagged. Just a microsecond delay, barely detectable, but enough. He held position, gauging how far such micro delays left him vulnerable.
A dreadnought shell, at least, would have made me stronger, he thought. Damn our superstitions.
Slowly he relaxed, the sensors gutted, making the banners waft a little. There was nothing more to be done. The Legion champion himself was most likely dead now, caught up in the convoy's cataclysm. That was scant comfort, of course, for it would have been finer to have killed him face to face, in the way of the plains. Shiban let the glaive's tip fall and turned from the centre of the dueling circle. As he did so, he caught the outline of an observer in the shadows, hovering outside the light of the candles, waiting patiently. Jochi would never have held back before. Before, he would have called out earlier, sharing in the appreciation of the art of blade play.
You have tidings for me,
said Shiban, breathing a little heavily, moving to where his glaive's rosewood case hung.
The Star Speakers have completed their scrutiny, Jochi said, bowing. We have orders from the Kagan and are to pull back to the inner circle.
Shiban nodded. He placed the Guandao into its felt-inlaid casket, pulling the leather straps tight.
What of the other raids? Three convoys were taken and carried into the warp. One was a personnel detail, so there are new recruits for the fleet crews. And the others?
Jochi paused.
Hayu is taken. Jean Camargue is silent. Our losses were heavy, Khan.
Shiban moved towards the dueling chamber's exit, and Jochi fell in alongside him.
Such is war, Shiban said. It is, but...
Jochi shot him an uncertain glance.
It has been like this for a long time, Khan. The Armujin is gone.
We did what we were ordered. Many traitors died.
More of us.
Shiban reached the curtains barring the exit. Soft lumens in the corridor outside bled over the paper floor threshold, illuminating the lines upon lines of inked script.
We are no longer fighting, Xenos. Our enemy is as deadly as we are. My Khan, I must speak.
Jochi held his ground, refusing to cross the barrier. Shiban paused, then inclined his head.
At Prospero, more than 4 years ago, we made the vow for Terra. Much was sacrificed for this, and yet, still we are here, out in the void, bleeding on the blades of an enemy that cannot be defeated.
Shiban listened impatiently. None of this was new to him.
We try feints within feints, Jochi went on. We lay them trails and hope to gain slight advantage, but they know our games now. We should have had many more hours with the convoy before the enemy arrived. They barely sent enough ships to contest us, and still it was enough. How many cruisers did we divert from Kalium? Did Kinja take the gate? Do we know that yet?
Not yet.
The traitors outnumber us. They are four legions to our one, so we must kill four of them for every warrior we lose, and still it will not be enough. We slow the advance, said Shiban. In the beginning, yes.
Jochi's brown face was intense in the candlelight, marked by the ritual scar on his cheek.
Yes, I could see that. But do you believe it now, my Khan? Tell me truly, and I will believe it too.
Shiban drew in a long breath. His own opinion, which he had come to hold firmly as the blood tally had lengthened, was of no consequence. The Legion's strategy had been set by the Kagan, and only he would change it. Even as the hordes were brutalized, beaten back, bled white, they would not go against Jagatai's ordinances. Not again.
So what would you have me do, brother? Shiban asked. You have the ear of the Kagan.
Shiban snorted.
You think so? Tell him.
Tell him what? Shiban blurted, feeling fatigue catch up with him at last. It had been hours of solid practice since Memnos, 3 days since he had slept. His mood was already choleric. This did not improve it.
We are fighters. Our Kagan throws us into the jaws of the beast and we rejoice in it. We are broken and we laugh to see it. We are given no rest, no respite, and it cleanses our soul. That is it. That is all there is. Or did you hope for me to find you somewhere safe to shelter?
Jochi flushed. His fingers twitched just for a moment as muscle memory responded instantly to the impulse to draw a weapon.
You know that is not what I seek.
Shiban looked away, already regretting the words. There was no lack of valor in the Brotherhood, just the long, slow grind of weariness, hammered in over continual retreat. He had voiced the same doubts in the privacy of his own meditations, even then castigating himself once they had formed in his mind.
We might have made the journey once. We have left it too late. The enemy surrounds us, biting at our heels. All there is left to do is to cultivate our hatred. There will be Kurultai, Shiban said. The losses will be recorded. When the hour is right, the Kagan will rule.
Jochi bowed, His frustration had not gone away.
I know it, and yet there are those who...
Shiban looked hard at him.
Speak, brother. No secrets between us.
They say the numbers are now critical. That is what the star speakers report. We cannot hold even our core. There has been talk of changes.
Shiban studied his deputy. Jochi had always had an honest face. On Chondax, when they had fought freely for the last time, it had been as clear as the skies, prone to the laughter they had once been famous for.
The Oath Breakers, Khan,
Jochi said, looking back at him sidelong.
They will be summoned back.
Shiban took him by the arm, gripping with a mechanical fist.
The Sagyar Mazan paid for their crimes in death, he said, his voice low. All payment has been made. Not all. How do you know this? Those who can bear arms are being mustered again, said Jochi. All of them.
Shiban forced a smile, though it came out more like a grimace.
You heard wrong, brother. The ether is turbulent. Star speakers dream badly when the tempest rages.
Jochi looked equivocal.
Still, the talk runs.
Shiban held his gaze.
Then hear this new talk from me, your Khan. Do you suppose I know nothing of these gutter rumors? And do you think, for a heart's single beat, that I would allow them back, the ones who forgot their loyalty? This thing will never happen. Better to die alone than with the Sagyar Mazan.
Jochi's eyes dropped. Shiban released him.
But, see, you did well to speak to me of this,
said Shiban, trying to give him something.
Know that I have no feud with you, brother, nor with those who always ran under the sign of the Ming'an, who held their loyalty when lies spread through the whole fleet. I could never have. We too swore once here, on this ship, you remember? That is what remains.
Jochi nodded.
But the Oath Breakers are cast out, said Shiban. They do not come back from that.
Even as he spoke, Shiban felt a fresh spasm of pain, a numb jolt from the mechanicum machines that kept him alive. That was a reminder of what that treachery had cost him, his speed, his joy, his future. So much was already destroyed, and the traitors of the Ordu had played their part.
So... They do not come back, Shiban said again, turning away from the dueling circle. The price will be paid. If other souls waver in the collection, be assured, I shall see to it myself.
The walls shook, hit by repeated flank strikes. Even deep within the battleship, ringed by layer upon layer of reinforced decking, those impacts reverberated. Revuel Arvida hurried down the corridors of the Lance of Heaven, heading for the main apothecarian. His limbs still burned from the discharge of warp power. He could feel the flare-up now and knew it would be worse over the next cycle. Already his eyes burned, his heart labored. It would have been best to retire to his chamber to fight the change, as he had slowly learned to do in the cool calmness of his sanctum, but these tidings could not wait. Even as the battered White Scars attack group fought its way to the Mandeville Point, harried by Eidolon's fleet, other matters had become pressing. He reached the portals, guarded by two hulking warriors of the Keshig, and pushed past them. Inside, many figures clustered around the main Medicaid slab. Most were mortal, drawn from the battleship's standard crew. Less than half of those were Chogorian, for the turnover in human specialist staff had been particularly savage, and the majority now came from scavenged and press technicians from other legions and army regiments. Jubal Khan stood at the head of the slab, his helm removed, his arms crossed. His face was bloody, and his topknot hung limply over his shoulders. Namahi, Kinjar's protege and second-in-command, as well as others of the Keshig and the Khans of many brotherhoods, were there too. They parted to allow Arvida access, and he leaned over the slab. Kinjar had been cut from his battle plate. His body was exposed under the Medicaid lumens, a mass of churned flesh and broken bone. His face was held together with a crisscross of pins, and nutrient tubes gurgled as they entered the many lacerations made by Jaijan, the battleship's M'Chai apothecary. His armor had been heaped to one side, bloodied and hollow like so much scrap. Atop it all was the dragon helm, now in two pieces. Kinjar saw Avida approach through his one working eyeball, and the blood trails around his mouth bubbled into a weak smile.
"Sorcerer," he rasped,
barely above a whisper. Avida leaned closer. It was dangerous to use the warp again so soon, particularly when surrounded with the Legion's elite, but in this case, there was little choice.
"Do not weaken yourself," he said,
placing his mind voice within Kinjar's.
"Speak to me this way."
For both of them, the apothecarian dissolved in a white haze, and then they were facing one another, their bodies restored. The mind image of Kinjar laughed. Freed of the horror of his ruined body, it sounded just as it always had done in life. Sonorous, good-natured, preternaturally calm. All the old guard of the plains had sounded the same, though Kinjar was the last of them, save Yeshugai, the last of those who had fought with Jagatai on Chogoris, braving ascension beyond the customary age, and surviving.
"We failed," Kinjar's thoughts proclaimed, matter-of-factly. "It was an impossible task. I would have driven them out of that place. I would have seen them run, just as we made them run on Perisima."
That had been 2 years ago now, a great victory driven by surprise and speed, perhaps the last of them.
"You did your duty, Keshiga. That is all he will want to know."
In the mindscape, Kinjar's craggy features wrinkled in a smile, as if the too bright sun of the homeworld glared back from the endless grass.
"He will blame himself. It will seem to him that we have stayed in the void too long."
Avida nodded.
"If he speaks to me, I will tell him otherwise. All the ways were watched. Even if we had wished to, we could not have broken through." "He knows this. He has been a just master all the years I served him. Blame is now of no use for any of us. The search must continue."
Ravalian said she knew of a way. This is why we did these things. She may yet be proved right.
"Whether or no," Kinjar sighed inwardly, "he made the oath over the ruins of his brother's realm, and it will drive him. He must reach Terra."
"And if no path remains?" Kinjar's outline grew more vague. The wind became chill, and the sky deepened to night blue. His smile disappeared, to be replaced by growing pain. His soul was shearing from its foundations, pulling free of the body.
"Do you not see one? You are the fate scryer."
Avida did not know how to respond to that. He could not even see his own future skein, except for the visions that came while in the warp, and those were not ones he wished to recall. And yet, there were times when truth was a cruelty.
"The road will be found," he sent, confidently. "If Ravalian is wrong, another way will be made. The Kagan is a force of the universe. We both know this. He will not be denied by it."
Kinjar tried to smile again, and failed. The pain of the real world became etched on that of the imagination, and the old warrior's once hale face began to dissolve.
"You neither, sorcerer. Now, take this final command. Cure yourself before you cure any more of us. Promise me."
Avida stiffened. How much did he know?
"I no longer make promises," Avida sent.
In the real world, moving blindly, he took up Kinjar's smashed hand and pressed his gauntlet against it.
"The hunt will be eternal for you, and I swear this, your name will be remembered on Terra."
And then the mind images dissolved, and the Spartan apothecarian reasserted itself around him. Kinjar spoke no more, whether in the mind or in the real world. Arvida found himself gazing down on a mangled heap of scorched organs and skin scraps. Chaijan and his attendants had already moved away, cleaning their instruments, turning off the blood cyclers, preparing the Narthesium. For a moment, Arvida was still. "You remained unsullied, right to the end," he said softly, remembering their first shared battle amid the glass dust of Tizkar. Then to himself he murmured, "I may yet come to envy that." He stirred and straightened. Namahi was looking at him, as was Jubal, as were all the others.
"The sound weapons," Namahi said, disgusted. "No blade, no matter how fast, parries them."
Arvida was struck by the edge of grief in Namahi's voice. The Kargan's own brotherhood were as close to one another as bloodkin. And there was more, another link to the sundered home world cut. The strands were becoming frayed.
"What did he tell you?" asked Jubal.
Jubal was different. He had been far away from the Legion during the upheaval on Chondax, carried into the furthest reaches of the galaxy at the head of an Ikan, a great hunt that had arced beyond the galactic plane in pursuit of the Xenos Mjordhain raiders. By the time his strike force had returned, bearing the head of the Xenos-controlling Patriarch on a silver shield, the Imperium was turning in on itself, and he had been thrown into the heart of combat with no opportunity to ask why. A lesser warrior might have succumbed to fate in the confusion and void war that had followed, but Jubal had always been a spirit of fire, and all the traps laid for him were broken. The Lord of Summer Lightning he had been on Chagoris, a capricious spirit who had defied restrictions even by the standards of a legion that placed little value on them. Almost alone among the White Scars, his name was known across the wider ranks of the Great Crusade, whispered alongside the most exalted company, held up as a legend of elusive renown on worlds that had never seen a son of the Altak. That he had lived to fight his way to the Khan's side again was one of the few causes of joy in an otherwise harrowing campaign, a sign that their most vital soul had not yet been quenched. Regarding him now, Arvida saw just how different Jubal was to Kinjar. The Keshig Master had been quiet in voice, solid in manner, his strength coming from within, like a deep well sunk into bedrock. Jubal was the other side of the Legion's soul, flamboyant, artful, unfettered. Somehow he had retained that during the long retreat, his Guandao still flashing defiantly as blood flowed across worlds. Perhaps his time had come now. Perhaps this was the age of wildfire, of the master of the hunt, rather than the horde.
"Little enough," Arvida said, no longer wishing to talk of it. "He died well, with his spirit laughing."
Jubal held his gaze for a while longer, searching.
"We could have died alongside him if we had chosen. We could have held our ground. They would have made verses of that."
Arvida did not question his judgment. It was not his place. He was the outsider still, suffered to fight with the Ordu, but never one of them. He had made sure of that himself, retaining the marks of his old order, refusing every offer to take up the ways of weather magic, the arts of the plain shaman.
"We did what we came to do," he said, evenly. "But the price was high this time." "When has it ever not been?"
Jajan returned to the slab then, his Narthesium already whining. His attendants began to prepare the body. From the rear of the Medicaid chamber, menials entered, bearing white ceremonial robes, each marked with the calligraphic glyphs marking the passage into eternal heaven, the wide arch of the sky, the hawk's flight. None of the Khans moved. Jubal looked at Arvida.
"We will give him Karl Damark. You may stay, sorcerer."
He would have done. If he had been able to choose, he would have watched the Chogorian death rite, as he had done so many times, giving honor to the master of the Khan's own elite, sharing in the privilege that almost none outside the Ordu had ever witnessed. But the flesh change had got worse. The pain sang around his collar, bleeding up into his neck and across his chest. He could feel his limbs press up against the inside of his armor, hot with blood, seething like squalid nests of insects. He had already lingered too long. The edge of peril had crept up on him, worsened by the use of his mind voice. That was the curse of his homeworld, one that had pursued him into the void even after his rescue from Prospero, dragging him back towards the fate of his old legion. To reject the offer made him feel wretched, but Kinshaw's last command still resonated.
Cure yourself.
He was your legion's champion, Arvida said, bowing stiffly. He is yours to mourn. For a moment, Jubal didn't hide the slight. The offer once made would not be made again.
As you will it, he said.
By then, though, Arvida was already moving. He left the way he had come, feeling the flesh pressure mount. Only when he had reached his own chamber, ringed with the wards he had created himself using the last of the knowledge he had taken from Prospero, did the pain begin to sharpen into curative agony. He knelt within the circles and pentagrams, knowing that the worst was yet to come, and that soon he would be crying aloud, lost in the visions that came with the change and his fight to prevent it. He screwed his eyes shut, balled his fists, trying to recall the words of the Corvidae litanies. All he saw was Kinjar's face, and then the sky over Tisca, and then Calliston's death, and then the ghost that had always been there within the shafts of sunlight and the crystal refractions, waiting for them all.
Damn you, he hissed. Not yet.
And then the screaming started. The world was a black sphere of silver-veined iron. Its distant star was white-blue, casting its every surface with ghost-pale edges. Once it had possessed oceans, but these had boiled away a million years ago, leaving open pans of ebony rock naked to the heavens. Its cloudless sky was black to the void, revealing the torso of the galaxy, strung like a trail of jewels against the infinite dark. Spectre, the place had been called by the first explorators to make planetfall. The rock had been charted, surveyed for minerals, assessed for habitation or cultivation, and rejected on all counts. Chill winds ran across its empty plains now, curling at the edges of crystalline rock towers. Strange lights flickered and glowed in the frigid skies, glinting from the mirror-pure chasms below. For a long time, the hush of those winds had been the only sound on Spectre, repeated through the centuries in overlapping, moribund murmurs. But now the winds raced from a different cause. Ancient dusts were stirred up, skittering across cracked rock plates. The sky's purity was broken by the heavy thunder of landing thrusters. Vessels, dozens of them, made atmospheric entry, powering down on columns of thick smog. Most were Legion gunships, fitted for fleet escort duties, switching from orbital to atmospheric engines as they plunged earthwards. Their flanks were a dark sea green, all emblazoned with the eye of their Primarch. The gunships extended across the plains in all directions, setting up a cordon around the center of a wide circular expanse, itself surrounded by ranks of towering stalagmites. Where they sat down, sons of Horus honor guards emerged, all wearing ceremonial cloaks and carrying heavy power spears. Once the cordon was complete, a lone stormbird made planetfall in the center. Down the steam-wreathed embarkation ramp trudged warriors in ebon-faced, bronzed-encased cataphracti plate. The Justerin, most feared fighters of the most feared legion. They marched with a perceptible martial arrogance, the confident tread of those habituated to ascendancy. The Justerin had always made their armor their own, marking it with heritage tokens extending back to the gangs of Chthonia. But now the alteration of their legion issue plate had accelerated. Blood-brown bones clanked from chains set about their waists, and their pauldrons bore iron spikes set amid more glistening eyes. Sigils had been daubed across shell-chipped ceramite, signs of potency now taught to them by their consorts beyond the veil. Spectre's thin air shimmered as the Justerin waded through it, repulsed by the nameforms that flickered in its austere light. Once in position, the honor guard waited in silence, weapons held in static salute. They did not move even when the skies above them were sundered a second time. More landers cut their way down from orbit, this time bearing the white and green livery of the 14th Legion, named the Dusk Raiders by the Emperor, renamed the Death Guard by their Primarch. Their own elites, the Death Shroud, clanged down the ramps from their Stormbird, each one a match in stature with his Justerian equivalent. Bearing power scythes two-handed, they lumbered into position, and the two sides faced one another across the glass-dark rocks. The Death Shroud bore no new sigils on their pauldrons, and their armor remained much as it had been throughout the Great Crusade and its aftermath, rime-filthed, battered, plain. No demon-whispered signs had been scratched on their vambraces and greaves, just the accumulated muck of an endless campaign, staining a livery that had never been pristine, even upon leaving the forges on Barbarus. They remained 30 meters apart, those two forces, making no move to close the gap. No hails were issued and no challenges laid down, for those killers were not the reason that Spectre's long isolation had been disturbed. The first to emerge from his transport was the Death Lord, limping into the open from the Stormbird's gaseous interior, leaning heavily on his reaper, Silence. His face was hidden under a battered cowl, his verdigreed armor swathed in the tattered remnants of a fine cloak, his iron boots plastered with the caked soils of 100 worlds. Vapor trailed after him in curls, expelled from intestine-like coils of cabling. His breath rattled, his back was curved, and his stance was crabbed. And yet, there could be no doubt of the power cradled within that savaged shell. Even in his seeming decrepitude, he somehow dominated all around him. Every dull ring of his scythe's heel against rock echoed heavily. His great shoulders spoke of an almost infinite endurance, an ability to withstand forces that would have laid even his brother Gene Gods low. The sickly pallor that hung over him was not weakness, but the spawn of a long-gestated bitterness that extended back to the toxic world of his scattering, one that made him almost infinitely capable of enduring punishment. As he reached the center of the circle, the Justerian bowed as one. The gestures were not the perfunctory bows of diplomacy, but the recognition of a paramount lord in their midst, one who had overseen the slaughter of entire systems at the head of a legion whose pale ships had become a byword for implacable, silent, inexorable murder. If he noticed that, Mortarion gave no sign. He came to a halt, his rebreather clicking between hisses. A pair of yellow-green eyes peered out from the shadow of the cowl, heavy-lidded, windows onto a soul that had always been marked to suffer. Then, slowly, achingly, the Death Lord moved his weight from the Reaper's haft, pushed his mottled cloak to the side, and sank to one knee. His great head lowered in obeisance, followed in due course by those of his own retinue. Mortarion had only ever bent the knee to two souls in creation. One he had since sworn to destroy, the other now emerged from the facing Stormbird. He, like his legion, had grown far beyond his allotted bounds. The old dynamism, the almost unconscious flair that had made men love him and armies pray to be given to his command, had been strangled long ago. The golden white of his armor had stained and darkened. The furs had thickened, the ceramite plates had fused into new and tortured forms. His agility had been swallowed up by a new, horrific, cloying bulk. His armor hood rose high over his head, lit from within by a seething cushion of blood-red energies. His right arm terminated in the immense, industrial outline of the talon, which, even at rest, seemed to snarl with barely contained killing lust. When he moved, it was as if the matter of the galaxy itself hastened to clear his path. He had become immense, obscenely so, an elemental force even among those who had been gifted with the Emperor's divine touch. The gold and ruby eyes that festooned his baroque armor seemed to gaze out with wills of their own, scrutinizing, judging, testing. And yet, it was his own mortal eyes that were the greatest horror of all. Where they once had been vital, questing, alive with pleasure, they were now dark, ringed with ridges of pale flesh. They were the eyes of a soul that had peered into the epicenter of the abyss and faced the shape of reality in all its abject, cruel majesty. Nothing reflected from those orbs now. They were like black holes, greedily sucking every scrap of light into their unfathomable depths. Horus Lupercal, Warmaster, came to a halt before Mortarion and extended his left gauntlet.
My brother, he said, kneeling does not suit you.
Mortarion looked up, his expression, as ever, impossible to read behind the mask and the cowl.
You must accustom yourself to it. Soon we shall all kneel, sire.
Horus beckoned him upwards. Heavily, awkwardly, Mortarion complied. Then they embraced as brothers, and for a moment it was as if the lesser Primarch was swallowed up in the mauling embrace of the void. Horus released him, and Mortarion looked around.
Ezekiel not with you? I thought he was your shadow.
I thought Typhon yours.
Mortarion hacked a contemptuous cough.
Who knows what Kallas does, or where he is? I seek him myself. If you should run across him, be sure to tell me.
Horus's gaze flickered then. His eyes, those grey-ringed eyes, moved strangely, as if witnessing things that were not there, or things that ought to have been.
You know why I wish to meet.
You have 1,000 worlds under your heel. You have ringed the throne world with fire. The galaxy is severed, barring Gilliman and the Angel from reaching our father's side. These things are all now done, and the stage is set.
Horus did not smile. His once easy humanity had drained away from him, replaced with the distant, distracted grandeur of a different plane.
In my mind, this thing had been done by now. Every day sees our advantage slip a little.
Mortarion shook his head, wheezing.
Then give the order, brother. Set it in motion.
Horus gave a wry smile.
And that is all there is to it, he murmured.
He looked up, his bleak gaze sweeping the crystal-sharp starfield arcing above them.
We did not bring all of them with us. They are out there, still fighting against the webs we have placed them in. That is the problem.
His expression hardened. Even in those minuscule movements, the projection of incipient command was always lurking.
Lorgar's storms will not last forever. They can be broken, given the will, given the strength. And what then? All those we have sealed away from our father's side, racing back to add their banners to his?
Then give the order.
Horus turned back towards him, a brief flash of irritation rippling across his bloated features.
We do not speak of some petty warlord scraping a living on a backwater rock. Even in his weakness, he is unmatched. You know what made him. You know why he and he alone could lay the foundations of all this. Can you compass what it is even to conceive of killing such a one? To do it properly, so that he cannot escape the blade's cut and cling to his shriveled soul. You do not see the full peril.
Since Molech, brother, you have lost your good humours.
Since Molech, there are no good humours. I am become Vengeance, the destroyer of creation. So no, I do not laugh as I once did.
Mortarion sighed.
Shall I say it a third time? No more delays. Launch the assault. My legion stand ready.
No doubt.
For a moment, there was a kind of gratitude in those ruined features. Dawn
is accounted for. Russ has been crippled at Alexei's and wastes himself in dreams of bringing me to his strange form of justice. Korax is lord of an empty legion, and Ferris and Vulcan are dead. That only leaves one who could hurt us.
Mortarion looked wary and said nothing.
I had resolved to command the Phoenician for this, said Horus. He and Jagatai always despised one another. I would have enjoyed the sight of Fulgrim teaching the Warhawk a lesson in humility.
Then ask him.
If you can find him, then you may do so yourself.
Horus flexed his talon instinctively, a gesture of impatience.
Come. We both know this. Fulgrim cannot be trusted. He performed his one great task on Istvan V, so do not look to him for anything more.
Mortarion shook his head, making the jars of toxins hung around his neck rattle.
I will not do it.
You thirst for vengeance, do you not?
He did not best me.
No one says that.
Mortarion slammed the shaft of silence against the rock, sending shuddering lines of forces snaking across the dark plates.
I will be at your shoulder, he hissed. At the forefront, I have kept my sons pure. I could have twisted them like the others, but they still answer my command, and they still hold their discipline.
You shall be with me, just as I promised.
I will not be left behind.
Mortarion's speech was thick with long-bottled suspicion.
I have as much thirst to see our father kneel as you. More I would claim, if all be reckoned.
And as the palace burns, you shall be at my side.
Then why place the Khan before me now?
Because I can trust you, Horus said, exasperated. Do you not see it? You look for slights in every shadow, waiting to be cheated, and yet you, my jealous brother, are the only one I have left.
He laughed out loud, bitterly.
Behold the tally of my rebellion. Angron has made himself mad. I cannot charge him with the simplest tasks. Perturabo, by the gods, Perturabo, he would have been left standing while the Khan's savages ran rings around his trenches, and the Scars have no fortresses for him to lay low. Alpharius is silent and ties himself up in knots of his own devising. The list grows short.
Mortarion listened cautiously, his filthy armor system cycling and gurgling.
I come to you, said Horus softly, because I have no others. The Khan remains on my flank, his legion intact, his fury undimmed. The storms keep him hemmed, but he will find a way to break them. He cannot be suffered to live. You know this. Once Jagatai has been destroyed, the last barrier falls.
Horus loomed over his hunched brother and grabbed him by the neck, one claw on either side.
And then,
he breathed, drawing Mortarion's scabrous face close to his own.
It shall be we two at the spearhead. You have kept your legion pure. You do not disappoint. We approach the Nexus now.
Mortarion's suspicion never left him. His eyes flickered, the dry skin of his lips twitched.
You were true brothers, you and Jagatai, he said. You were as close as mingled blood.
We were all brothers. Do not think I will regret one more death.
Or is it this? You do not do it yourself because you cannot.
At that, Horus hesitated.
You really think that?
Have you not considered it?
The War Master said nothing. He released Mortarion from his grip and withdrew.
I do not think there is a living soul I would not be able to slay now, not since I saw what waits.
He looked back towards his Jean brother, less assured now, his visage haunted.
When the moment comes, when I have him in my grasp, I will not hesitate. I know this, at least.
Mortarion listened, breathing heavily. Even after all that had happened, considering the very end of the Enterprise was uncomfortable. They all had blood on their hands, rivers of it, but killing mortals was one thing. Slaying a living god, however false and sickened, was another.
My gaze cannot waver from terror, Horus went on. You cannot imagine what a burden that is. Even as we bring the other realm into this one, and the ancients respond to my lead like whipped dogs, there still remain the old soldiers' curses, munitions, ledgers, schedules. I cannot deviate. Every wasted day narrows the lens of the future.
Still, Mortarion listened.
We reach the inner rings of iron now, Horus said. The first of Dawn's defenses, arraigned on 100 worlds. Each one will fight until the last breath is choked from them. Even with Perturabo, even with me,
These will not be easy victories.
The War Master looked back intently at his pallid brother.
So, I need the Khan destroyed.
He has his legion, I have mine. This too will not be an easy victory.
You will not be alone. Eidolon hunts him even now. You are to join him.
Mortarion laughed savagely.
Ah, I can see how that would appeal to you. Me and that thing. Perhaps all your humors have not been bled out after all.
Horus did not smile. Fabius has made him deadly.
Yes, yes, we are all deadly.
Mortarion hacked again, shifting his weight, looking uncomfortable.
Then Eidolon knows where the Fifth Legion musters.
He has their scent.
So it is still a hunt.
What else could it be? Mortarion smiled darkly.
Aye.
He sighed and flexed his gauntlet absently. The great dents and scores in his armor, made on the crystal dust of Prospero, had not been excised. They were the badges of a contest that had not been concluded. In Mortarion's exposed upper face, something like eagerness had kindled, the desire to finish what had been started.
I am not the same as I was when we last met,
he said. You have not taken your full quota of gifts.
Not yet. Not ever. I am not like you. I do not wallow in this corruption. I use it. I control it. I set bounds on it.
Horus did not reply. His black within black eyes reflected nothing.
Then I have your word,
said Mortarion at length.
You will wait. We shall assault the throne world together.
Horus held up the talon to the faint bluish light, as if it now served as some kind of pledge of surety. Have I ever lied? He asked. Even to my father. A time will come where there can no longer be lies, for truth and falsehood have no currency in the realm of dreams. I bring this time to the galaxy. That is why you follow me, just as you once followed him.
Not as I followed him.
But, yes, you have my word.
Then you have mine.
Mortarion seized the talon with his own gauntlet, and its surface was subsumed within the massive lightning claw.
He will be caught. He will be slain.
If that news pleased the War Master, he showed no sign of it. He merely nodded. A fractional gesture, the mark of one more task achieved, one more obstacle to the throne cleared away. Tell me when it is done, he said, releasing Mortarion's gauntlet and letting the talon fall. Above them both, Spectre's icy winds eddied. All I need is the word. Then the final assault begins, and you will be there with me to lead it.